A quick talk with Bender. As I mentioned, Perillo back throwing on the bullpen mound. Just giving him a couple extra minutes to get ready. I'm sure Bender will get Berkland, and that might be it. Just as I say that, Mike Spears takes the baseball right from the 6'3 right-hander from Vacaville, California. Kyle Bender will exit the ballgame with runners on first and second and one out. A 2-2 ball game against the Wausau Woodchucks here in the top of the ninth inning. Don't go anywhere. Michael Perillo entering the ballgame when we return on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
Want to get out of just about anything and look like an earth-saving hero? Just use the environment excuse. High school reunion? Ooh, sorry, can't. Planetary obligations. Unfortunate bridesmaid's dress. Unfortunately, you promised the climate you'd buy more vintage. Chauffeuring teens? Yeah, the Earth really needs them to hoof it. That's right, the environment is always the best excuse. So go ahead, ask your bae to dim all the lights because carbon emissions. Tell your dad-botted dad to eat more plants. For the planet, obviously. Kindly tell the kids to stop asking for a new phone. I mean, e-waste, right? Find your out and opt in to cutting carbon. Just visit theenvironmentexcuse.org. A public service announcement brought to you by WildAid.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
It's what we were taught, trained, and told to do.
It could be for anything. Helping a friend move.
Listening to a fellow veteran for hours, at any hour of the day.
Or just simply making time for people. A neighbor, a loved one, or even a stranger.
We're often the first to help others. There's no question about it.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When was the last time you reached out for help?
Perhaps it's time to do for yourself what you would do for others.
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Since the moment you were born, I've made 1,000 wishes. Wishes for your future. In a world that's changing fast. For all of the things you may one day do. Do play and laugh. Do win and lose. Do learn from your mistakes. And challenge yourself to grow. Do not be afraid. Or make decisions based in fear. Do it all with confidence.
Michael Perillo into the ball game. Runners on first and second, one out. Top of the ninth inning. 2-2 the score. Woodchucks Rats here on this Monday night at historic Witter Field. Andy Ockham, your voice of the Raptors, rejoining you up here in the broadcast booth on WFHR. Jake Berkland steps into the box. First pitch from Perillo. In there for a called strike on a fastball. Kyle Bender. An inning and a third tonight, three hits allowed. No runs, but he's on the hook for both runners on the bases right now. A walk and a strikeout for Bender this evening. Perillo working first base side of the rubber. Rocks and fires home to Jake Berkland. This is low and outside. Nice backhand there by Cashel Duggar to keep it in front of him. Perillo, the 6'2 right-hander from UC Irvine, pitching in his fifth game as a Raptor this summer. He last worked a scoreless inning, but he struck out one in a 1-2-3 inning back in the July 6th ball game against Green Bay. Nobody holding on the runners. That's Christian Smith-Johnson, the pinch runner on second. Axelis Jr. is on first. The 1-1 home from Perillo. Ground ball left side of the infield. Zagotti has it, but it's in and out of his glove. There's not going to be a play to be made anywhere. He had it for a couple of seconds, but it bounces out. That's the first error of the night for the Raptors, and it loads the bases for the Woodchucks with just one out here in the top of the ninth inning. To third is Smith Johnson, to second Solis Jr., and it's back to the top of the order. Vance Sheehan made his Northwoods League and Woodchucks debut yesterday and had a three-hit game. Has a chance here to be a hero potentially for Wausau tonight. Sheehan's reached twice in this ballgame, each in his last two plate appearances. A base hit the fifth and a fielder's choice in the seventh. Corners in, middle's back for the Raptors. First pitch to Sheehan. This is up and in for ball one. On deck would be Jonas St. Antoine, but a pinch hitter. That is the switch hitting. Edion Espinal played second base and hit out of the two-hole yesterday for Wausau. The 1-0 pitch. That one misses down in the dirt, blocked by Duggar, 2-0. Bases full of woodchucks. There is nowhere to put Vance Sheehan. From Moore to Paulson to Bender to Perillo. Righty-on-righty battle. Expecting a fastball here from the Raptors. 2-0. This one popped up right side of the infield. Owen McElfatrick, infield fly intact. He makes the grab. That is a huge second out for Michael Perillo here in the ninth inning. It is the switch hitting Espinal, officially hitting in the spot here of St. Antoine. Mention Espinal. St. Antoine had a huge swing of the bat earlier today, his third inning home run. Still, he's being lifted here for the switch hitting Espinal. Espinal obviously hit second and played second yesterday. He reached four different times. Hit by a pitch and scored in the first. Drew a five-pitch walk and scored in the second. Also drew a five-pitch walk in the third. His lone knock came in the bottom of inning number six. It was a single. Bases loaded, two outs, 2-2 the score. Switch hitting Espinal will hit from the left side here against the right-handed Michael Perillo. Can the Raptors get out of this unscathed and enter the home half of the ninth inning with the top of the order due up? First pitch to Espinal. That one misses low for ball one. Infield in regular depth. There's no need to prioritize getting the out at home or anywhere else. Closest base does the job. It's Evan Parmer. The newest stopper for the Raptors warming up in the bullpen now. The 1-0 pitch. That fastball's in there for a called strike. Count evens 1-1. One. 1-1 count. Bases juiced in this 2-2 affair. Top of the ninth inning, the payoff. So misses low for ball two. Out on third is Christian Smith, Johnson, Max Solis Jr. is on second, and Jake Berglund is on first base. Here comes the 2-1 pitch. This one tapped foul out in front of the woodchuck dugout near Max Galvin in the on-deck circle. Two balls, two strikes, two outs, bases loaded in this 2-2 ball game. A big delivery coming here from Michael Perillo. And, of course, some of this momentum will be halted now as home plate umpire Chris Castro asking for some new baseballs. Able to receive them from Ashton Crocker, the wonderful bat boy here tonight at Witter Field. Big moment for him to be out there, but it's an even bigger moment on the mound right now for Michael Perillo. Peering into Duggar, comes set, has the signals. The 2-2 pitch. This one is grounded hard, foul down the third baseline. We'll do it again. Espinal, the third woodchuck to be used off the bench here in this inning. Chance for him to break the 2-2 tie. Perillo looking to put a stop to this frame here. The payoff pitch, that one just misses low and inside. Doesn't get more dramatic than this. 3-2, two outs, bases loaded. Runners will be going on the pitch here in a tie ball game in the top of the ninth. This crowd here tonight getting rowdy and getting into it. The pitch of the ball game right here. Runners take off. It misses low and inside for ball four. Espinal fired up, turning around and looking at the first base dugout of his woodchuck teammates. And a run comes in to score first and breaking the 2-2 tie. It's 3-2 in the top of the ninth inning. Smith Johnson to score. Solis Jr. to third. Berkland on second. Raptors hoping to just keep it here. Galvin in the box. First pitch from Perillo to him. This is outside for ball one. Galvin in this ball game reached for the first time an inning ago. Led off the eighth with a single. Has a chance to break this thing wide open. Perillo, first base side of the rubber, the 1-0. Misses high and outside for ball two. Two balls, no strikes. Down in the count here is Perillo. The 2-0 delivery from the Raptor right-hander misses up and out. Not competitive there on the 2-0 for ball three. Galvin will be keeping the bat on his shoulder here. No reason to go after anything and make Perillo work to you. The 3-0. This one on the outside corner is called a strike. Perillo going to work back into this battle here. Not giving in. There's nowhere to put Galvin. He already walked in the go-ahead run. That run being charged to Kyle Bender. The 3-1 delivery. Fouled back by Galvin. Count now 3-2. Good work around the zone there for Perillo. Once again with a 3-2 count. Two outs and the bases loaded. Runners will be motoring on the delivery. Getting right in the middle of this Wausau order, too. Perillo's full count pitch. This is outside for ball four. Back-to-back runs walked in for Wausau. This one on six pitches to Max Galvin. And it's 4-2 Woodchucks. Colin Brigham's the eighth hitter of the inning to step into the batter's box for Wausau. He hit his second home run of the season yesterday. In this ball game, he's reached once. That was on his base hit an inning ago. The first pitch from Perillo. This one catches the top of the zone on the outer edge for a called strike. Raptors will have some work to do here. We get to the home half of the ninth inning. As mentioned, top of the order due up. Perillo's 0-1. This is up and away to even the count at a ball and a strike. One ball, one strike, two outs, 4-2 Wausau, both runs. The 1-1 pitch from Perillo. This one hit in the air down the left field line. That one will clear the rat trap deck and head on to the concourse. Count now 1-2. We'll see what Perillo goes with. Him ahead in the count here at one ball and two strikes. Gears in with 17 on the pitch clock. Comes set. The 1-2 pitch. This one fouled straight back just to the netting right below our press box up here. Another 1-2 pitch to come here in this battle between Perillo and the Woodchuck cleanup hitter. Fifth game of the season played in for Brigham. Entered yesterday's contest, hitting 4-for-12 to start off his season and continued his slugging success. He 1-2 again. Breaking ball, missing outside. Good movement on that one from Perillo, but didn't quite catch the zone. It's now 2-2. This game, over 3.5 hours old, was a 6:35 first pitch here at Woodard Field tonight. I should say 6:38. That was the scheduled time this evening. The 2-2. Breaking ball, misses up and away. Another full count. Raptor fans, the dugout, the coaching staff not thrilled with Chris Castro tonight behind home plate. There's nothing they can do about that now. Another 3-2 pitch with two outs and the bases loaded. The payoff delivery. This one fouled straight back. Runners taken off. They'll have to go back to their respective bases for the next 3-2. Evan Palmer done throwing in the Raptor bullpen, so it appears this might be Perillo's last hitter if he's unable to retire Riggeman. The 3-2 pitch yet again here in this battle. On the inside corner, got him looking. Eight hitters set to the plate here in this inning for Wausau. Much needed punch out for Perillo after walking in two runs. 4-2 the score. Some work to do here for Wisconsin Rapids against Jorge de Cardenas in the home half of the ninth inning. Owen McElfatrick, Chris Arroyo, and Jack Matthews set to do battle when we return right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward.
Camping.
Visit AdoptUS.
America's pastime. The fresh air, the lack of phone signal, and the ability to relax with a cold beer by the fire. Then the next day, not the best. Take the day to recover and call El Cafe and order tacos to go. Choice of chicken, beef, chorizo, topped with lettuce, cheese, and pico for only $2 a taco. Add french fries for $1. Call El Cafe 715-887-2233 for a meal the whole family will love and a day of recovery for you.
Are you and your family weather ready?
I'm Terry Barr.
Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You may have heard the word derecho as a part of the weather lately, but what do you know about it? Derecho is a Spanish word meaning direct or straight ahead. It's why you may hear straight line winds blamed for damage from a derecho. A downburst, which is an area of strong, damaging winds, causes a derecho, and the Weather Service does not issue warnings for these. They're just standard severe thunderstorm warnings. So this means you'll want to be weather ready during any severe storm. If you're outside, camping, hiking, boating, find a shelter. Otherwise, lie flat, face down, on low ground. Most derechos happen in July, and Wisconsin typically has one or two per year. But experts say climate change will only help increase these numbers. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to Wisconsin Rapids Raptors Baseball on WFHR.
Bottom nine here from Winterfield. The first pitch from Jorge de Cardenas. Owen McElfatrick is in for a called strike. 4-2 the score. Woodchucks, Raptors, Wisconsin Rapids, 2-2, 3-1 it here from historic Winterfield. 0-1 pitch. McElfatrick fouls this one straight back. Just missing us up here in the press box on the roll-up. Count now 0-2. Andy Ockham, your voice, the Raptors. We're joining you right here on WFHR. Two runs put up in the top of the ninth. A couple of walks issued to bring in the go-ahead runs in the contest for the visitors. 0-2, swing and a miss. Three-pitch punch-out of McElfatrick for de Cardenas as the first out in this ninth inning. Defensive swaps here for Wausau. Christian Smith-Johnson in for Hayden Christensen in left field after pinch running for him in the top of this inning. Isaac Webb was the pinch hitter for the leadoff hitter. Luke Pemberton, the right fielder, he's out right now as Webb. And Espinal Edion, that is, hitting for the third baseman, Jonas St. Antoine, he's into the ballgame at third base. First pitch to Chris Arroyo, rolled over on the ground to second base. That is gloved by Vance Sheehan and thrown to first in time. Two up, two down on four pitches here for de Cardenas here in the ninth inning. He's in pursuit of the win out of the bullpen here tonight. Kyle Bender's line done. Right-hander allowing one earned run. Michael Perillo getting a tab with an earned run as well. Jack Matthew, the last hope to keep the inning alive for the Raptors here tonight. Matthew has reached in every single plate appearance in this ballgame. 2-for-2. He's drawn three walks. First pitch to Matthew. One misses up and in for ball one. Four runs on nine hits, three errors for Wausau. Two runs on seven hits and an error for Wisconsin Rapids. 1-0 pitch. This one a fastball right down Broadway in there for a called strike. Cardenas looking to get the final 2 2/3 innings of work here tonight. He just threw his 45th pitch of the ballgame. He's allowed one hit. He's walked two is punched out 5. 1-1 pitch drifted in the air center field. Max Galvin camping underneath, and he makes the grab to end the ball game. It's a 1-2-3 top of the or bottom of the ninth. Jorge DeCardena sealing the deal here this evening in Wisconsin Rapids. 3:41, the time of the game here tonight. As mentioned, 4 runs, 9 hits, 3 errors for the Woodchucks. 2 runs, 7 hits, and an error for Wisconsin Rapids. We'll be back for official postgame show for Raptor Baseball in just a couple minutes to follow here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever-changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather-ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The heat is on. Did you know that high temperatures are the leading cause of weather-related deaths? Here are some safety tips when you're dealing with a Wisconsin scorcher. First, do not leave another person or your pet in the car. 8 kids died in hot cars in the last several years across the state, and it didn't even have to happen. Look before you lock and walk away. Work outside, keep water close, and stay hydrated. Take a break in the shade, and if you can limit time in the heat, even better. Chill out in the air conditioning or find your community's cooling shelter. And check on your family and neighbors to be sure that they're safe too. Stay cool and be cool by being weather ready. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The big winners are in for the Scotty Summer Contest.
Exciting. Let's listen to the calls.
Hi, who's this?
It's Tori.
You're one of our grand prize winners.
All right, man. Great to hear this morning.
We got some good news for you.
Okay.
You are one of our grand prize winners.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome.
Winning is fun. Just ask Tammy from Baraboo and Tori from Kewaunee.
Thank you. That's great.
Listen for future chances to text and win on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
Now, back to more Wisconsin Rapids Raptors baseball on WFHR.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated with lead miners in the state, not the animals. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers, digging tunnels into the hillsides where they worked. So was there almost another state animal? Yes, the white-tailed deer, which later became the official wildlife animal. But the history surrounding the badgers is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was when they moved the camera. Whenever it's like the red alert. The,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Great. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Let's get back to the Raptors here on...
Do you worry about how much someone drinks?
Do you feel angry or depressed most of the time? Do you feel neglected or unloved?
Do you feel that if the drinker loved you, she or he would stop drinking?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are not alone.
Not everyone trapped by alcohol is an alcoholic.
Families and friends are suffering too.
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Call 1-866-200-0223 or visit alanon.org/help.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid too, even if they've applied in the past. Enrollment is always open. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
When it comes to advertising, the landscape gets more and more confusing every day. As a business owner, you've got dozens of choices on how to spread your message. At Civic Media, our goal is to help you unclutter that landscape. For 100 years, radio has successfully delivered customers to the doors of local businesses because we're local too. Local news, local topics, and local people that care about the places we broadcast. That gives your message credibility, and that's key when it comes to getting your message in the ears of the right people. Learn more about how this Civic Media station can help your business thrive. Go to civicmedia.us and click on sponsorship. From right here in our town to across the entire state of Wisconsin, we'll get the right message to the right people at the right time. And you'll be surprised how effective and budget-friendly radio advertising can be. Again, log on to civicmedia.com and click on sponsorship. We'll have a talk and help you craft the message that works for the people that you want to reach.
Let's get back to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Final here tonight, 4-2 Wausau over Wisconsin Rapids in the first of two home games for the Raptors this season from historic Witter Field. Four runs on nine hits, three errors for the Wausau Woodchucks, nine left on base, two runs on seven hits, one error, and the Raptors left 18 on the bases here tonight. Andy Ockman, your voice of the Raptors, returning with you from WFHR, back here for your official postgame show, as always, for every single game we run through it, no matter the result. And tonight it was two heavy hitters starting it out on the hill. Two of the league's most well-respected arms so far in the second half. Adiel Melendez, the left-hander, toeing the rubber for Wausau against Bryson Moore for your Raptors. Melendez went three innings. He allowed four hits, two runs, one of which was earned. He walked two and struck out four, throwing 80 pitches here tonight. Bryson Moore threw three innings as well. His third start with Wisconsin Rapids and his first here at Witter Field, allowing two hits, one run. It was earned. He walked one and struck out five and threw 57 pitches. From there on the Raptors side, Nick Paulson, the left-hander from UW-Stevens Point, four innings of one-run ball. He's thrown seven innings here in the second half and has allowed just one run. That came off the bat of Bryce Hubbard tonight. We'll get to that when we talk about the scoring in just a couple of minutes. Four hits given up for Paulson. Similar to Moore, he also walked one and struck out five. Paulson did so on 72 pitches. Kyle Bender threw an inning and a third, three hits allowed, one run. It was earned. He walked one and struck out one on 28 pitches. And Michael Perrello, we'll talk about the ending of that one as well in the top of the ninth, walking in the game's two winning runs. Two-thirds of an inning pitched, no hits, a run allowed. It was earned. He walked two and struck out one on 27 pitches. Out of the bullpen for the Woodchucks following Adiel Melendez, it was Evan Allwine for two and two-thirds, or one and two-thirds, I should say, one hit allowed. Four walks, one strikeout, 58 pitches. Bryce Carter threw the next inning at two-thirds, and Jorge De Cardenas getting the win tonight, going two and two-thirds, allowing one hit, no runs. He walked two and struck out five on 46 pitches. Scoring started in this one at the top of the third. It was a solo home run for Jonas St. Antoine, his second of the season for Wausau, clearing the right field wall with two outs against Bryson Moore. It's the second time this season in the three starts for Moore that he's allowed just one run, and it came via a solo shot. The Raptors got their two runs in this game. In the bottom of the third, 2-3-4 spots led off the inning. Chris Arroyo led off the frame, reaching on an error. Jack Matthew then singled. Those were the two runs that came in to score. One on an error that Walker Buchanan reached on, and the other on an RBI single from Aiden Teal. From there, zeros thrown up on the scoreboard like crazy. Both bullpens doing a fantastic job tonight. But Bryce Hubbard's fifth home run of the season, a solo jack with one out in the top of the sixth inning off Nick Paulson, made it a 2-2 ball game. Bases were then juiced in the top of the ninth, many innings later. And as mentioned, Michael Perrello entering the fray with the bases loaded in the spot of Kyle Bender. He walked in the game's two winning runs. Time of the game tonight, 3 hours, 41 minutes, 931 wonderful Wisconsin Rapids Raptors fans in attendance tonight from historic Witter Field. Degree at the time of the first pitch, our weather was 80 with some overcast. De Cardenas the win, Perrello the loss, Perrello's third loss of the season here in this one. The big key to take away, the Raptors leaving 18 on the bases, something they'll look to clean up tomorrow night when we're back on the road in Ashwaubenon against the Green Bay Rockers. It's a 6:35 first pitch from Capital Credit Union Park. You know what that means. It's a 6:25 pregame show right here on WFHR. As always, I've been Andy Yochum signing off for now here in Wisconsin Rapids. We'll see you tomorrow night in Ashwaubenon right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
You've been listening to Rafter Baseball here on WFHR, brought to you by 8th Street Auto, American Shaman, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Aspirus Health, Solaris, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Delta Dental of Wisconsin, S&S Distributing, Econ Electric, Greenaway RV, Comfort Air Heating Cooling Fireplaces, Pro Seamless of Wisconsin, Swiftwater Ice Cream, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep Dodge. Listen into Rafters Baseball here on WFHR all summer long, or check us out on the Civic Media app.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Any shower or rumble of thunder ending, we'll see partly cloudy skies the remainder of the night. Lows near 60 and winds will be light. On Tuesday, mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies, highs in the lower 80s, a slim chance of a shower or storm. Right now, it's 64.
100 days, 144,000 minutes. The countdown to the November presidential election is on, and Maggie Dawn is counting too as she continues her special segment, Biden's Top 100.
Having heard from each and every one of you, I should start talking about what President Biden is proposing us for his second term.
Biden's Top 100 continues. You're invited to be part of it too. Call or text the Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays starting at 2, across the Civic Media Radio Network and the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I woke up today and deliberately, and I don't do this often, deliberately consumed some right-wing radio. Some of the crazy outrage candy of the morning. Got a little of that. Got a little of the F channel. Decided to check out what kind of lunacy is over there. And then said, you know what, maybe not far enough. Actually delved into some of the real crazy cable fringe kind of stuff. And interestingly enough, not one of them, at least I didn't see it, not one of them talked about Joe Biden using his new powers, you know, to take out Trump or to jail journalists or, you know, just the crime in general. Not one of them seemed to be all that worried that Joe Biden was going to use these new superpowers. Now, my email box, my friends on the left, not so with Donald Trump and even my right-wing friends. Some of them are going, well, he might abuse it. He may. And here to share some thoughts on, you know, what this recent decision by our Supreme Court, by the nine in robes have come up with. I've asked Devin Ombres to come talk with us. Devin is a senior director for courts and legal policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Devin, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be here. Wish it could be under better circumstances.
So, you know, am I being hyperbolic and going, hey, you know, I wanted to wake up and see if the right was going, you know, Joe Biden's now going to take, he's going to use these new powers and he's going to go on a crime spree. Because look, if you listen to him up until this point, you know, Joe Biden's this great mastermind criminal, him and the son, but didn't hear that today.
No, it's weird how that happens. And the fact that Joe Biden is a good and decent human being and a great public servant, he actually went on TV last night and said, even though the Supreme Court gave me all these new powers, I'm not going to abuse them. Unlike the other guy, because if past is prologue, then somebody who's already been convicted of 34 felony counts, facing 88 other felony counts, has been found to have been credibly accused of raping someone whose charity has been completely demolished because it was committing fraud. that person might be slightly more scary than somebody who has been a public servant for 50 years.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, my right-wing friends all came out and said, this is what you Democrats always do. This is what you liberals always do. You know, the Supreme Court does something you don't like. All of a sudden, it's the sky's falling. They're evil. Is this decision that came out on Monday that does now give immunity to presidents from this day going forward? Is this what we're afraid of? I should put it this way. Could this be what we're afraid of?
This could be what we are afraid of. Core constitutional powers of a president are now are immune, full stop. Any other power that he can exercise as president gets a presumption of immunity, which means that any prosecutor after the fact has to overcome a lot of hurdles to show that they were engaging in criminal activity and that prosecuting them for it wouldn't hinder the ability of a president to exercise their powers, which means effectively that he can do whatever he wants. And if we're talking core constitutional powers, selling pardons, sure, why not? Seeking bribes for vetoes or the enactment of executive orders, sure, why not? That's absolutely immune. If he wants to direct people under him to commit crimes and then offer them pardons, that falls within a presumptive immunity. There's very little that a president with these authorities could not do. And, you know, July 2nd, two days before we celebrate our 248th birthday, where we got rid of the divine right of kings, the Supreme Court just decided that whole Declaration of Independence, no, that doesn't jive with us.
But what do you say to the person, Devin, who goes, you know, all the things that you just enumerated, you know, the selling of pardons, the, you know, the vetoes that seem to be politically motivated, you know, people believe that's already happening, you know, because I, you know, on both sides of the aisle, people believe that, you know, you can sell off pardons and there's a quid pro quo there. Those could be prosecuted before?
Pardons could never be prosecuted, but now you can just be open about it. I think you look back in time in our lifetime, the biggest pardon scandal that occurred was Bill Clinton pardoning Mark Rich,
yep,
at the end of his term. I'm young enough that I don't remember the intricacies of it. I just remember that it was a big deal, but it really hasn't been a thing. But at this point in time, Trump could literally say, Steve Bannon, January Sixers, I'm going to pardon you. And it's in with his prerogative, but also I want to enlist your help to go do things. So the quid pro quo is very much on the table. But the other thing that I think people need to think about if they think it's happening on both sides is, you know, educate yourself a little bit, because if you listen to right-wing radio, good Lord, we're a bunch of child-eating pedophiles. But the evidence is never there. It's conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory with zero facts to back it up. And unfortunately, we live in a fact-based society, which is unfortunately part of what seems to be splintering the country. One side decides, I know better. I did my own research.
Yeah.
And everybody else is like, no, here's facts. I'm going to trust experts.
Yeah, I'm glad you hit that, because, you know, one of the things that came out of the pandemic that's driven me nuts is that phrase, you know, do your own research. And I'm sorry, you know, watching YouTube videos on the can with your mouth open is not research. But, you know, it's passed off as. And this is where, you know, this world of alternative facts comes in, that Trump and his ilk have brought into our politics. And this is what concerns me about this, because, you know, clearly you're the legal expert here. But as I was reading through the decision, did Roberts enumerate what an official act is, and did he lay out what it is and what it isn't?
There are core official acts which are set forth in the Constitution. But the thing that really got me is a throwaway line on page 20 that says the president has all the authority to discuss with the attorney general investigations and prosecutions and to direct them as the chief law enforcement officer in the country. So breaking that down into lay terms, that means the president has full authority to politicize and weaponize the Department of Justice. And the last time we saw that happening was back in the 1970s when a guy by the name of Richard Nixon directed his underlings to break into the DNC, tried to intimidate the FBI, used his powers to have the CIA undercut FBI investigations. and was using all of what would now be considered outside bounds of his presidential authorities and provide presumptive immunity. You could go out on a limb and say that the Supreme Court just legalized Watergate. And that's what we're looking at. Since that time, the president has dutifully remained independent of DOJ. DOJ does their own thing. They fill the president on what's happening, but he doesn't have a say. Now the president can direct the DOJ to prosecute his political opponents. He could have them start investigations into anybody and everything that he feels is appropriate. And if anybody refuses, he could fire them for refusing an illegal order or a directive to conduct an illegal investigation, and there would be no means to prosecute him for it.
Now, what's interesting is, as I'm hearing you say this, I'm hearing in my head all of my Red Hat friends who believe what you just said is already happening. They believe Biden sat down with Garland and Bragg in New York, and that they've devised this plot to go get Donald Trump, and that this decision is vindicating Donald, poor innocent victimized Donald Trump.
I mean, you can believe all you want if you listen to right wing talk radio, as we're on left wing talk radio. The evidence never matches the accusation. And the accusation is always a projection of what they're planning on doing. Joe Biden didn't run on a platform that subsisted of two blanks, retribution and revenge. And that's all I can tell that Donald Trump's planks are. That's the only thing he's running on at this point, without getting into the hellscape that Project 2025 will create.
Now you've opened up another can of worms because, you know, now does this give him the ability to go and do all of those things that he said he was going to do using Schedule F to fire all the federal workers and then make patronage great again by bringing in all these loyalists that are being vetted as we speak by the Heritage Foundation and others as under this Project 2025? This now makes all that legal, doesn't it?
Short answer, probably. I think the lower courts will be able to put speed bumps in the implementation of some of it. But as these trend up toward the Supreme Court, we have seen this Supreme Court side with him on the merits in every case before them. We have seen them side with the right-wing, crazy A Fifth Circuit on the merits in every case where it got to the merits on that. I had a question earlier today. Is Amy Coney Barrett a moderating influence on the more right-wing judges? And I think Amy Coney Barrett is whip smart. She's a hell of a writer. And she has been making the right noises about moderating and narrowing, calling into question some of the doctrines that the far-right justices have been using. But until she starts siding with the more liberal justices on the merits of cases that have really significant negative impacts on the American populace, then that hope is illusory. So I hope she moderates. I hope she's a moderating influence, but she's not there yet.
No, because I've been saying for the last several years that, look, Republicans want to repeal the 20th century, and they're going to use the Supreme Court to do it. We're going to go back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. And this, along with the decision last Friday, seemed to be moving us in that direction rather quickly.
Are you trying to get me to have your audience fall asleep by talking about administrative law? Because I'll talk about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire all day long.
Yeah, so, by all means, this is a labor program. You know, these my audience are working people.
Okay.
They're not in the red hat, blue hat world. These are folks who get up every day, punch a clock, and want to know that they're going to come home at the end of the day and be safe and be alive at the end of the day. That's what my audience wants to know.
And I want that for them too. And the Supreme Court apparently doesn't, because two cases that they just issued, Loper Bright versus Relentless, repealed a 40-year-old Chevron doctrine, and Corner Post, which came down yesterday, opened up the entire Code of Federal Regulations to challenge. If it was created in 1948 or 2018, it doesn't matter, because everybody has a bite at the apple now. And those two cases combined really limit the ability of agencies like the National Labor Relations Board or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration from being able to put in place things against labor abuses. You want to raise minimum wage or the threshold to get overtime pay. You want to stop bad employers from wage theft. Good luck with that, because labor law relies on Chevron, and the Supreme Court just ended Chevron.
So we'll cut you off real quick. So, you know, on Tuesday, Joe Biden and the Biden administration announced the heat exposure rule to protect workers from, you know, basically dying because of heat exposure. What you're saying is that that's probably never going to make it to law because they're going to sue, and this court will, well, who knows what.
I mean, I'm going to venture that they're going to sue in the Northern District of Texas, where there are six Trump appointed judges who will do anything that Leonard Leo and his ilk, who are, you know, payrolling these litigants, to do. So I would imagine that there will be a nationwide injunction, and then it'll go through the process. And to the extent that it gets to the court on the merits, you got best case scenario 5-4. And preventing that. And then you've got folks like I'm a Floridian, so I understand the concept of hot summers, playing football back in the late 90s, doing two-a-days in August. It ain't fun. And I wasn't working out on a rooftop, you know, rolling tar for 8 hours a day. DeSantis just wiped all that off the map. Yeah. They say they want democracy. They say they want local rule. But, well, why is it that when liberal municipalities or blue municipalities do things like create worker safety programs to make sure that people aren't dying of heat stroke, governors like DeSantis and Paxton rip those away from the localities where they're enforced?
Come on, Devin, you know those are job killers.
Yes, literally, they are killer jobs. If you do it wrong,
that's the right turn of phrase. I say, you know, look, you know, they claim it's a, you know, job killing regulation. I said, what about the lack of regulation that actually kills people? So it seems to me, and you know, help me here then, because you know, and it seems like we're venturing back into not such a great era for working people. I've been saying for years we're going to head back to the Lochner era, where if you're desperate enough and hungry enough to work for poverty wages and deplorable conditions, that's your liberty, it's your freedom.
You and I are simpatico, sir, because I say Lochner and people glaze over. Yes, 100% Lochner. That's they've said that's what they've wanted for decades.
So real quick, explain to people in your view what that means for the person working on that roof, the person driving the truck, that electrical worker working on the power lines. What does that mean for working people when you say they want to take us back to the Lochner era?
So you think corporations have power over you now? Wait until the Lochner era is reinvigorated, because back then the court almost always sided with corporate interests and rights. And they would routinely hold that the government does not have the authority to protect individuals over corporate abuses. That's it in a nutshell. That's the Lochner era. And here's the kicker, though. You may think, well, we have access to the courts because we can sue and we can do class actions. Over the course of the last decade, this conservative court has been creating stronger enforcement mechanisms for arbitration clauses, which a lot of people have contracted for when they're employed, which means that you don't get to go to court. You get to go to an arbitration that you help pay for, that they get to select the arbitrator who is in their pocket, because if they rule against corporations, they don't get hired anymore and they don't get any more money. And there is no right of judicial review in those cases. You think, okay, well, you know, if they're abusing us as a franchise, we can act as a class. Well, also, the Supreme Court has been narrowing the ability of class actions to move forward. They are stripping the little guy of the rights to enforce their rights against powerful entities. That is what this Supreme Court is doing. That is what they have been doing. This is enacting the right-wing agenda. They've been doing it for decades. Leonard Leo started the Federalist Society in the 1980s. This is their end game, corporate supremacy over everyone and damn near monarchical power in a unitary executive.
That's the scary part in all this. And I keep saying, you know, they're going after workers, consumers are going to be there, and citizens. Look, you agree? Donald Trump said he loves clean air and clean water, but yet we're going to have now lawyers deciding whether we get that.
Yes. So I hate to be all doom and gloom.
Hit me.
Because there are kind of a couple of bright spots in all of this. If Congress has a willingness to side with the American people instead of the corporate interests, which means we're going to have to get Republicans on this as well. But the way that the Loper-Bright case that overturned Chevron was written, the way that the Corner Post case was written, is these are not constitutional rulings, which means Congress can act. Congress can codify Chevron in some capacity. Congress can institute a very simple fix to the statute of limitations that would close challenges to all of the Code of Federal Regulations except anything that's been filed within the finalized within the past 6 years, unless it's as applied. I'm not going to get into that.
No. But
Congress could act with some relatively simple fixes.
Congress could act. You had me at, there's some things we can do. And then you lost me at Congress can act, because we can't even seem to name a post office anymore, let alone do some of this stuff of which you speak. But I guess this is why November matters. This is why elections matter. We need to be throwing some of the people out who have been supporting this stuff and getting both sides of the aisle, people in there who are going to say, no, we don't want to go back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s. But Devin, I appreciate the thoughts, the expertise. This, I'm sure, is going to get worse before it gets better. And I'd love to have you back again to explain what's going on.
Happy to do it anytime. Thanks for having me.
Devin Ombre, Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy there at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Want to hear your thoughts. You concerned about where we're heading? You concerned that we're going back to the good old days? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1835. That was the day that textile workers walked off the job at 20 Mills in Paterson, New Jersey. But this was not a strike like we might picture one today, with burly men walking the picket line or women chanting as they carry picket signs. In Paterson, most of the strikers were children, ages 10 to 18. Many were young girls. Child labor was in high demand in the silk mills because of their small, nimble fingers. The children walked off the job because they wanted an 11-hour workday and a 6-day work week. They were tired of working 13 grueling hours a day, 7 days a week. Soon, their parents formed the Paterson Association for the Protection of the Working Class to support the strikers. There were no labor unions in Paterson back then. The company refused to negotiate. Women textile workers at other mills in the area also walked off the job. At its peak, 2,000 workers had walked out on strike. Finally, after 6 long weeks, the company agreed to a compromise. They settled on 5 12-hour days and 9 hours on Saturday. The children went back to work to a 69-hour work week. Strike leaders were blacklisted from the mills. This would not be the last time that child laborers took a stand on the job. In 1912, children workers were an important part of the famous Bread and Roses strike of Lawrence, Massachusetts textile workers. In 1933, children workers in Allentown, Pennsylvania sweatshops joined in a strike. Their participation led the governor's wife to join them on the picket line. The strikers there won an increase in wages and reduced hours. Children fought against their exploitation by taking to the picket line.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Now, you know, look, with Devin, got into the idea of the Lochner era, and we haven't talked a lot about that over the last year or so, but it's right now fully back on the table. The fact that they've destroyed the administrative state. It's coming. This idea that we now have no longer the unitary executive, we're gonna have a king. I guess this is where this could go. And I've had people go, well, how's this going to matter to me? Why do I care? How's it going to affect my life? Because these cases, you know, they seem so abstract and so out there. Understand that we have in this country this kind of certainty. You know, I saw a small business group going, hey, you know, this uh, this attack on the administrative state is going to kill small businesses because big business is just going to run right over us. The regulations that are put into place about fair competition, you know, all that stuff is now on the table to be overturned. We're in the Wild West moments now. Where do things go? And this is that transition moment. We are now going to see all of the bad ideas that conservatism has been talking about for years that we've been warning about. We're going to see a lot of this stuff and we're going to have to live through it. And as I've said before, you know, if we're going to live in bad times, let them be now so that my kids don't have to suffer too much. But it's getting to be, this court isn't going anywhere for 30 years. I'll be gone by the time there's an opportunity to change how bad this court is. So it comes back to being cognizant of who we elect into the White House, who we put into halls of power. And then starting to think about what kind of a country do we want? Do we want to have safe drinking laws? Do we want to have clean air laws? Do we want to hold corporations accountable? Do we want to hold our president accountable when they're wrong? And there's a case, you know, making its way through the courts now where our billionaires, you know, Bezos, Musk, the folks at Trader Joe's, they're in the process of going, hey, Supreme Court, rule that National Labor Relations Act. Rule that unconstitutional. Throw labor relations in this country into chaos. Now, there are those of us who go, I don't know, that's a bad idea. Because maybe workers go, wait a second. There is no labor peace. Maybe we find militancy. Maybe we find our way back together. And this is where it's easy to have despair. It's easy to go, oh my God, the sky's falling. But it's also an opportunity for people to go, you know, wait a second, bridge too far. No, I don't want rivers burning. No, I don't want corporations to have absolute power. No, I don't want a president who can have someone shot on Fifth Avenue. No, I don't want a president who can crime at will and have no accountability other than maybe possibly an impeachment, which we saw during the Trump years. Didn't happen. And this idea for the average everyday worker who's just going, look, I want to go to work. I want to take care of my family. I want to have some disposable income to do some nice things, a vacation every now and again, you know, some you know, decent clothes, decent place to live, food on the table. You know, a lot of people just want to lead a reasonable life. They just want to be happy. They don't want to get into the political wranglings. They don't want to have to worry about, you know, what the president is doing every moment of the day. They want to live their lives. And fortunately, for a lot of people, they're able to do that. But understand what is happening right now is going to affect that. Once you start moving in a direction where government cannot enforce wage theft laws, where government can no longer ensure safe workplaces, where you can't propose a regulatory piece of enforcement that would protect workers from heat enforcement, from heat illnesses. That starts to break down. And, you know, we brought up the Lochner era. You know, that was an era in our country, 1905 to 1935, where our Supreme Court said government can make no law to infringe on the relationship between the employer and the employee. No minimum wage laws, no maximum hour laws, no safe working condition laws, nothing. Because it was all liberty of contract. You have the right, the liberty to make a bad deal. But the problem was, is everybody was living the bad deal. There wasn't that, I'll just go across the street. And what you had, there's, you know, workers working 60, 70, 80 hours a week for poverty wages in desperate conditions to survive. And corporate America is saying, hey, that sounds pretty good to us. Sounds like it would be very profitable for us. We hear a lot of people complaining about inflation. Why didn't we hear for the last couple of decades, as wages have been declining and stagnant, why didn't we hear workers complaining at this volume Well, because that didn't benefit the work of the investor class. This is where we got a lot of work to do, folks. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.